Good morning. You're listening to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear why community members in Denver are organising around the issue of increased numbers of police officers in schools. There's a community meeting happening this evening on that very topic. Then, KGNU is partnering with FLOWS, that's a sustainability leadership training and climate action group at CU Boulder, on a new series on grassroots sustainability. We'll hear why we need to recognise sustainable practices that are already happening in the community, and particularly communities of colour. Then on Resistance Radio, we'll hear from a rally that took place yesterday in Denver in support of the Palestinians, particularly in the light of the weekend's assault on Gaza. After headlines from the BBC, we'll get a new commentary from Jim Hightower. Then at 8:35, it's time for a public affair. And this morning, Frank Dapofsky hosts, and he'll speak with Lee Shanus of Intercambio about their efforts to encourage cultural exchange in Boulder. At 9 o'clock, it's media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
On Friday, seven oil and gas companies were sued for violating the Clean Air Act at numerous fracking sites in Weld County. Wild Earth Guardians filed the complaint in Denver federal court, saying that the firms, including Extraction Oil and Gas, Noble Energy, and Crestone Resources, did not have permits for emitting volatile organic compounds. The environmental organization is asking that the operations at the drilling sites be halted until permits are obtained and fines imposed for the alleged violations. In a news release, Randall Weiner, an attorney for Wild Earth Guardians, said that the companies have avoided compliance with stringent limits on smog-forming pollution and other toxic substances. Volatile organic compounds contribute significantly to ozone levels on the Front Range, and the state is currently designated as not being in compliance with federal EPA standards. About 2.5 months ago, Wild Earth Guardians sent a letter to the companies saying they were in violation of the Clean Air Act, but none stopped production or rectified the situation. The Daily Camera reports that the companies named in the suit did not respond to requests for comment. Youth activists rallied at the Colorado State Capitol Friday to remind legislators on their last day in session that there is much work left to be done on the climate crisis. The action was part of the youth climate strike events that were held all around the world. Westward reports that dozens of young people from Denver and beyond joined others from the Sunrise Movement and Extinction Rebellion on the Capitol steps calling for stronger climate action. Last week, the legislature passed a bill that would commit the state to achieving a 50% cut in emissions by 2030. Marlo Baines, one of the organizers of Friday's protest, said that the lawmakers have definitely taken some steps, but they still need to take a radical stance on the issues including fracking, air quality, and plastics. Haven Coleman, a 13-year-old activist, demonstrated Friday at the Capitol, as she has every Friday for more than 4 months. She asked, why should they work for an education when their future is being torn apart? A Denver landlord will pay $675,000 to a Muslim father and son who wanted to open an Indian food restaurant. The payment comes after the two men sued the landlord based on civil rights laws. Rashad Khan and his father wanted to sublease the space located in Denver's Capitol Hill, but they needed the consent of the owner, Katina Gatchis. Gatchis was recorded saying that she wanted an American person. A few days later, she said, quote, "They bring all the Muslims from the Middle East, and then I have a problem around here. Bam, boom, bam, boom," unquote. The Associated Press reports that the attorneys for the landlord said she admitted making the statements. The Khans operate a restaurant in Boulder called Curry and Kebab. They still hope to find another location in Denver. Colorado Governor Jared Polis will defy the Trump administration's ban on gender troops serving in the Colorado National Guard. Colorado Politics reports that the governor is joining five other states that are refusing to comply with the policy. A spokesperson for the governor said that he believes excluding perfectly capable service members simply because of their gender identity makes us weaker, and he has no intention of enforcing such an archaic rule. Last month, the military started to implement a ban on most transgender service members after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. National Guard units, however, are generally under the control of the state governors and not the Defense Department. Officials in California, New Mexico, Nevada, Oregon have said they will not comply with the ban. A California National Guard general said that his troops' gender identity is the least of their concerns. Colorado State Representative Brianna Tatone, a Democrat from Arvada, and the state's first transgender lawmaker, applauded Polis's move. She had earlier urged him to consider it last week on Twitter. Tomorrow is Election Day in Denver. Five people are challenging incumbent Mayor Michael Hancock, including Lisa Calderon, Penfield Tate, Stefan Seku Evans, Kaylin Rose Heffernan, and Jamie Gillis. The position of clerk and recorder and city council seats are also on the ballot, as are a measure to end the city's camping ban and a proposal to decriminalize the possession of psilocybin mushrooms. Ballots have already been mailed out and must be returned by 7 p.m. tomorrow night to vote centers around the city. People can also vote at the centers in person. Those locations can be found at denvervotes.org. Nederland Elementary and Nederland Middle Senior High School, Nederland Middle Senior High, will be closed today due to a power outage in the foothills west of Boulder. Today it will be mostly cloudy with highs in the mid-60s and a chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening. Tomorrow, cloudy with the high about 58 and a chance of afternoon showers and storms. Right now, it's 49 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Community members in Denver are calling on the Denver Public School District to move away from having police officers in schools, that's in the form of school resource officers, and to instead invest the millions of dollars being spent on this into mental health support and counselors for the students. Now, this is something that has been happening for many years, but DPS has been increasing their spending on school resource officers. There was also a recent widely reported incident where a father of a 7-year-old African-American boy says his son was placed in handcuffs in his Denver Elementary School. Well, Padres y Jóvenes Unidos is a community advocacy group that has been organizing around this issue, the school-to-prison pipeline, as they call it. And they have been hosting a series of meetings to hear from members of the community about the reality of having cops in schools. They released a report recently that shows that police are now called for non-safety-related incidents, particularly when it involves students of colour and students with disabilities who are deemed out of control. They also say that in the most recent school year, that's 2017 to 2018, black students were five times more likely to be referred to law enforcement. Compare that to their white peers. And this is often over minor disciplinary issues. And Latino students were 2.5 times more likely than white students to be referred to law enforcement. Jake Cousins is with Padres y Jóvenes Unidos. They're hosting another community meeting on the issue this afternoon at the Conflict Center on Tejon Street in Denver.
We get sold this idea that school safety means increased, you know, armed personnel in the building and metal detectors and, you know, discipline procedures that push out the quote-unquote bad kids. But what research tells us is that if you have a police officer stationed at your school, and you can call them school resource officers or anything else, they're sworn police officers, you're significantly more likely to receive a ticket or get arrested for a minor offense. And what we see, too, is that if you attend a school that's 70% or more students of color, you're 6 times more likely to be ticketed than, you know, students at a predominantly white school. And those racial disparities are obviously really troubling. And the community response that we've heard at Padres and the reason that we're raising these concerns is that we think that the over $10 million that the district spends on different forms of school policing, whether it's their internal security force or actual, you know, sworn DPD officers, could be better used. That we could use $10 million to put that money towards restorative practices or mental health professionals or social workers, academic counselors. Any of the things that research has shown really support our kids and help kids stay successful and in school and learning, and make school environments healthy places rather than making our schools feel like prisons and just ticketing and arresting our students.
Well, just to put some of this in context, there was a report that came out earlier this month that showed that 58 students have been placed in handcuffs by police officers in Denver Public Schools between 2017 and this year. And there was a recent social media storm when a father of an elementary school student in a Denver public school shared his experience that his son had been placed in handcuffs. And so talk about the criminalization of behavior in these schools. As you said, it's predominantly students of color. Behavior, similar behavior in a more affluent area is treated within the school with discipline procedures like, say, detention or something like that. But in other schools, it's treated as a criminal offense.
That's right. And it's like I said, it's much more likely if you have a school, you know, a police officer stationed at your school, that those minor offenses do get rolled into discipline or get rolled into tickets and arrests rather than discipline that the school should be handling. You know, you see scenarios where something that would traditionally be a trip to the principal's office gets handled by the school resource officer. And now you are talking about, you know, children as young as elementary school being placed in handcuffs. We don't have data from Denver Public Schools, but nationally, the majority of students that are ticketed or arrested in schools are under 15. So we're not talking about, you know, near adults, we're talking about middle schoolers and elementary school students. And while we, you know, value school safety, everyone does, there's not a lot of evidence that suggests that having more, you know, security personnel, school police actually makes students safer. In fact, the stories that we hear from parents are like the ones that you're citing. And if you look at these trends nationally, of arrests that take place in schools, you know, it's a fraction of a percent. 0.2% of arrests actually involve firearms, right? These aren't massive security breaches. They're, you know, acts of defiance or shoving another student in the hallway that end up getting rolled into students being placed in handcuffs.
There is a long-term impact of that, not just the psychology of being forcibly restrained in your school, but if these kids mm-hmm. then do get a ticket and ultimately that could end up as a criminal record. Talk about the long-term implications of this approach to discipline in schools.
We talk a lot about the school to prison, really the preschool to prison pipeline. Your educational outcomes and your social outcomes are dramatically worsened if you receive a ticket or arrest at young age. That's something that follows you through the rest of your life, both because, you know, you're often suspended or expelled with that and are removed from the learning environment, but now you have a criminal record that follows you because of, you know, some minor adolescent behavior and behavior, as you said, that's treated like kids being kids in certain districts and in certain schools that are affluent and white and not handled the same way with students of color. And sadly, that kind of push out is so common that, you know, we have national movements and campaigns around this because the outcome for our kids is so severe and for our society is so severe. We end up, you know, spending three times as much on every individual that we incarcerate that we could have spent in just supporting them as students rather than criminalizing them.
Well, I know that Padres y Jóvenes Unidos has been hosting community meetings on this exact topic under the banner of Counselors, Not Cops. And there is going to be one on Monday at 5:30 as well. What are you hearing from the community members coming to these meetings in terms of how pervasive all of this is?
The number one thing that we've heard from the community so far is that these are not old issues. These are not old problems. And it's time, you know, with a new superintendent in DPS, and it's time given how long our communities have endured these problems for the district to step up and get serious. And to their credit, they've committed to continuing to work with us, and that's a great first step. But the people are ready to see real action taken and real results, because these are not new issues that require us to reinvent the wheel. It's just time that we get serious about tackling them.
That's Jake Cousins. He's with Padres y Jóvenes Unidos. And they are hosting a community meeting on what's happening with resource officers or police officers in schools in Denver. It happens this afternoon at 5:30, and that's at the Conflict Center. That's at 4140 Tejon Street in Denver. And we'll put more information online at kgnu.org. It's just coming up on 19 minutes past 8 o'clock. KGNU is partnering with FLOWS. That's a sustainability leadership training and climate action group based at CU Boulder for a new series taking a look at grassroots sustainability. The series is made possible by a grant from Boulder County. And KGNU's Hannah Lee Myers brings us now this report on FLOWS and the link that they're creating between environmental and social justice issues by visiting homes in low-income communities.
What do we want?
Climate justice!
Why do we want it now?
If you follow news coverage of environmental issues, you're going to see a lot of white people. And you'll hear a lot about solutions to environmental problems only available to people of economic privilege.
Why do we want it now?
Ask the public to name heroes in the environmental movement, and you get names like
Al Gore,
Elon Musk,
David Attenborough.
But do a little research, and it's clear. Overall, low-income people and people of color are really leading the way to sustainable living, especially when it comes to day-to-day living.
You know, really the smallest carbon footprints are from low-income community members. We're trying to raise up awareness about that leadership, and we're trying to help that community find more voice in leadership.
That's Michelle Gabrieloff Parrish, Energy and Climate Justice Manager at the University of Colorado Boulder's Environmental Center. Michelle is also a coordinator for the Foundations for Leaders Organizing for Water and Sustainability, or FLOWS Leadership Program, at the University of Colorado Boulder.
I've just been trying to sort of work on helping change the narrative that to be an environmentalist or to be in sustainability is to be elitist, high income, or white, or a guy. And so part of the idea of today, and really part of the idea of FLOWS from the beginning, was highlighting the leadership of underrepresented communities, low-income communities, diverse groups of students, diverse groups of community members.
In addition to hosting sustainability leadership workshops like this one, over the last 3 years, FLOWS technicians have visited over 300 local homes in low-income communities to discuss their sustainability practices and install free water and energy-saving upgrades like low-flow toilets and LED light bulbs. Michelle says the interactions often highlight the sustainable practices many underprivileged minority communities are already using.
There's always these jokes about, like, who knows what's in the margarine container and the cottage cheese container. It's like you're going to open that up and you have no idea if it's actually cottage cheese in there. It's like last night's dinner leftovers. So trying to name that as sustainability practices, not just being frugal.
Magnolia Landa Posas is a FLOWS technician and group coordinator. She says the sustainability education happening during the home visits is mutual.
It's also just great to hear the things that they used to do back in their countries and that they've either forgotten about or have not been able to do in this new country. And so, like, trying to rethink, like, how do we compost however it is that we used to compost back in El Campo? How do we do that back here?
Magnolia says the FLOWS home visits can help multiple generations of low-income immigrant households, among others, adopt a sense of pride in their environmentally friendly habits.
I think the highlight of the visits, folks are able to be like, oh, wow, I'm actually contributing to a more clean and sustainable future. And that realization not only empowers them, but also empowers their children, which is, like, great because then you get to see them, like, interacting with their kids. Like, see, this is why it's important that we are reusing our containers, that we're putting our clothes out to dry in the, like, hanging clothes on the doors, making sure that they're not using as much, like, electricity, making sure food waste, right, making sure that they're eating everything in their plate, not only because it's healthy for them, but also because it means that it's energy that's being used to produce it.
Most of the FLOWS leaders are themselves people of color, many of whom have experienced hardship and bring their own sustainability experience to the table.
Oh, there's a bunch we can learn from, AD.
That's FLOWS community leader Peterson Jean. Like many immigrants, Peterson finds multiple non-environmentally friendly Western norms distressing and unnecessary.
Everybody have their own car. Like, one car, one person. Like, what the heck, you know? Nobody share, nobody pick up. Like, even you live on the house, everybody have their own car. Like a house with five people.
Peterson was already doing sustainability work in Haiti before coming to the U.S. But he says the connections and knowledge he's growing in FLOWS is valuable on a technical and personal level.
I can learn more from them. And then if I go back to my country, I can teach more. I can be more involved. I mean, I always see myself as a leader, and then now I can see it more like, it looks like I can say it's more strong with flows.
Empowering and educating eco-leaders of all backgrounds, races, ages, and genders is what Flows is about at its core. And Michelle Gabrieloff Parrish believes their work connecting social justice and environmentalism is about more than creating equity. It's a vital step for the overall success of the sustainability movement.
Because we're not going to get to our sustainability goals. We're not going to get to our climate goals if everybody is not involved and if the majority of people feel isolated from that movement. So it's actually imperative to sustainability that we get this leadership and these voices heard, because we will not get where we need to go without everybody.
For KGNU, I'm Hanley Myers.
And we'll hear more on the grassroots sustainability movement tomorrow on the Morning Magazine, ahead of a presentation to Boulder City Council on Tuesday night by local climate justice leaders. Many of them are Flows leaders as well. That's on tomorrow's Morning Magazine. Well, it's 8:25 and it's time now for Resistance Radio. Yesterday, about 50 people from Jewish Voice for Peace held their third annual Vigil for Palestine at the Walk for Israel Festival that took place at South High School in Denver. Organisers of the Vigil for Palestine that took place outside of the event said this is not the time to stand proud for oppressive governments, particularly in the light of the weekend's events in Gaza, where 23 people were killed, including 2 infants and 2 pregnant women, while 4 people were killed in Israel by rockets. Well, KGNU's Elena Claver went along to yesterday's vigil and spoke with some of the organisers.
Hi, I'm OC Adelfang. I'm with Jewish Voice for Peace, Denver Boulder chapter. We felt and have felt the past few years that this is not a time to be celebrating Israel. While it's, you know, because basically celebrating Israel is celebrating apartheid, celebrating a brutal military occupation, dangerous and limited daily lives of Palestinians. And first of all, it's important for us to show that there's plenty of Jewish support for Palestine, because the mainstream Jewish community tries to speak for us all the time and they don't represent us. The government of a country, Israel, does not represent Jewish people. It's despite the fact that they want to say that they do. They're a government, and opposing that government is like opposing any apartheid government around the world. It's not anti-Semitic. There's nothing anti-Semitic about justice and freedom. In fact, those are things we celebrate as Jews. And so we're here for that, and we're here to support our Palestinian brothers and sisters as they struggle to be free in what was their country 70 years ago.
And you can say this from experience because you grew up in Israel, is that right?
I did for a bit. First half of my childhood there, second half here. I've also been back. I went 2 years ago with my daughter, and we visited friends in Nablus in the West Bank, and we went through checkpoints to visit my Jewish cousins, who, by the way, are refusers, and they're the reason that I figured out what was really going on, because they told me when they were in the military years ago. So refusers means they refuse to serve their military duty. Yes.
Where do you recommend that people get more information locally and internationally about this from a perspective of peace and justice and human rights?
You know, Jewish Voice for Peace, the national organization, has a website at jvp.org. There's also the Palestinian-led movement for boycott, sanctions, and divestment, and that is at bdsmovement.net. There's a great Jewish-led source of information out there, which is mondoweiss.net, which puts up a lot of good articles, explain the situation. And then finally, I tell people, read the Israeli newspaper, Haaretz. It's the biggest newspaper in Israel. It's daily. They have an English version. The Israelis aren't hiding what's going on. So if you don't believe, or people say, well, you get everything from a biased source, go to the actual source. Better yet, if you're passionate about human rights, go visit, go on a delegation, go by yourself, visit the West Bank. You will meet the kindest, most open and giving people that you've ever seen. And really, there's no way to even describe Palestinian hospitality unless you have gone. It's amazing. It was so beautiful. I never thought for a second to be scared. But then when you come back across, for us as Jews, you know, they don't care. They don't stop you at the checkpoint. They just wave you on. But when we got back, I mean, that's where you see, so there's the checkpoint and all the guns, and then the Israeli people, where you just feel like this anger and this sense of fear, anger, entitlement, and militarism, really strong nationalism, militarism. On the Palestinian side, there's none of that. The people just want to live their lives. They want to be free. They don't want to live under occupation. They want to teach their classes and raise their children, just like we do.
That's Ossi Adelfang, who's with the Jewish Voices for Peace, that was hosting the third annual Vigil for Palestine at the Walk for Israel Festival that took place in Denver yesterday at South High School. And thanks to Elena Claver for that. It's time now for the Resistance Radio Calendar. The Colorado University Denver Social Justice Program is hosting a forum on sanctuary and solidarity in 2019 this evening. And it features Jeanette Vizguerra and Jennifer Piper with the Metro Denver Sanctuary Coalition, as well as several others, including Sarah Jackson of Casa de Paz. And this takes place at the Student Commons, room 1401 at CU Denver, starting at 4 p.m. Of all the evil that will happen. Also this evening, there is a vigil outside of the detention center in Aurora. That's at 3130 Oakland Street, and that's from 6 to 7 p.m. You can find out more information about those and other events online at news.kgnu.org. Click on Resistance Radio.